encrypting codes, well, I can kind of draw the same picture I've been drawing. We have Alice, and she wants to send a message to Bob. And again, it's going to be a quantum state that she wants to send to Bob. And the problem this time is that the communications channel that she's using is not perfect. So there's noise in here. And so the state that if Alice doesn't do anything clever and Bob doesn't do anything clever, then the state that Bob receives will not be exactly the state that Alice sent. There'll be potentially something wrong with it. And so Alice and Bob want to figure out some sort of coding that they can do so that the state that Bob receives is going to be the state that Alice sent. And so in some ways, this is the reverse of compression. So in compression, the goal was to send more information using fewer uses of the channel. So in quantum error correction, we're going to go the other way. We're going to use extra uses of the channel to send the information. With the extra uses are basically needed to compensate for the errors that happen in transmission. So let's see. So I've phrased this as a communications problem, but it has other applications. So for instance, so we have communications, but it can also be used for storing quantum information. So in storage, you can kind of think of that as a communications channel with Alice being in the past and Bob being in the future. But they could be in the same physical location. Okay? And then while it's stored in the memory for some time, there's errors that might happen during that time. And so Bob in the future wants to be able to correct those errors and decode the correct state. And then one of the main applications for quantum computation of error correction is to improve the ability of your computers to get the right answer. So quantum computers, as we've discussed, are not that easy to build. And you can't expect that all the individual pieces of the quantum computer will work exactly right. And so the idea is then, well, if you take the computation that you're doing and encode it using a quantum error correcting code and use a fault-tolerant protocol, then you can do encoding in such a way that the answer you get out at the end is correct, even though each of the individual pieces had some chance of failing, each of the individual gates, for instance. And we'll talk very briefly tomorrow about fault tolerance. But for now, let's just consider this communication scenario. Fault tolerant protocols add some extra stuff on top of error correction. We'll talk about the communication scenario. So we have Alice sending to Bob. So we can take inspiration from classical error correcting codes. So in the classical case, well, there's a very simple error correcting code. It's probably the first thing you think of when you try to figure out how to correct noise, which is the repetition code. So the repetition code, we're coding classical messages, right? So we have a bit. Could be 0 or 1, and we'll encode 0 as 3 zeros and 1 as 3 ones. Okay? And well, if Alice sends these 3 bits to Bob, but there's noise in the channel, then what Bob receives might not be the same as what Alice sent. So for instance, if Bob receives 0, 1, 0, well, that's neither of those messages. But you can say, well, I'll take the majority, and I will correct it to 0, 0, 0. I think that the original message that was sent was a 0. Okay? And what he's doing here is implicitly he's assuming that the probability of error per bit is not too high. So for instance, suppose the way this channel works is that we have a probability P of a bit flip error on each bit. Okay, then the probability of having no errors is going to be 1 minus p cubed. And the probability of having a bit flip error on the second bit is going to be p times 1 minus p squared. The probability of having a bit flip error on one of the three bits is 3p times 1 minus p squared. The probability of having two errors is 3p squared, 1 minus p. And the probability of having three errors is p cubed. OK. And the point here is that suppose Alice actually sent 111, but there were two errors, OK, on the first and the third bit. So then Bob would receive 010. And when he says, well, I'll take the majority and correct that to 000, now the state is totally wrong. But if it was only one error, then the state that started was in fact 000, and Bob corrected it to the right thing. Okay, so the point is that when p is small, the probability of having one error is order p, and the probability of having two errors is order p squared. And probably if having greater than or equal to two errors, I should say. And that's a good thing, because that means that if Faust were to send an unencoded bit to Bob, the probability that Bob would get the wrong answer would be p. But when Alice sends the encoded bit to Bob, well, if there's zero errors or one error, Bob corrects it. But if there's two errors or three errors, Bob gets the wrong thing. But the probability of that happening is order p squared, so that's better than they could do by not encoding the bit. Okay? So frequently when we talk about error correcting codes, we don't want to go through this whole kind of calculation. So we assume that there's at most one error. And the logic behind this assumption is this type of calculation, that the probability of having two errors is p squared, the probability of having one error is only p. Okay, and if we can get down the probability of error to order p squared, we're better off than not encoding at all. Now, you can also consider error correcting codes that correct more than one error, and then you might assume that there's one or zero, one or two errors, or zero, one or two or three errors. And I'll talk maybe a little bit about that, but mostly I'll focus on this one error case. Okay? Any questions? Yeah.
I'm thinking about if we use this repetition code for quantum bits, for a quantum channel, then there is it's possible for somebody who don't know what's actually the basis, or to detect what's the what was.
Well, yeah. So far, I'm just thinking about classical bits. Next step, of course, is to go to qubits and see what we can do for qubits. Okay, so let's do that then. So let's try to make a quantum error correcting code. And so maybe the natural thing, yeah?
I have one more question about this.
Sure.
What if p is quite big?
So p is quite big, so it depends how big it is.
Over a half.
Right, so actually over a third is already a problem. But p over half is actually kind of a weird case, because that means it's more likely to get flipped than to stay the same. So actually in that case you can say, well, let's assume it got flipped, and that's kind of the normal thing. And so you can go to 1 minus p. So actually, you know, 100% chance of being flipped, that's almost like having no errors at all, because you know it's been flipped. So it's only when p is near a half, actually, that you're your problem. But there is a regime here between p a third, and I guess two-thirds then, where having the error correct in code actually makes things worse. Because by having 3 bits instead of 1 bit, you have more places that errors can occur. And when the error rate is high, that actually can mean that the probability of having 2 errors is greater than the probability of having 1 error for an unencoded state. And in that case, the error correcting code is not helping you. And as indeed is making it worse. OK, so quantum error correcting codes. So maybe the natural thing to do is to say, let's try to make a quantum error correcting code based on this repetition code. So we'll make a quantum repetition code. We'll take a state psi, Alice wants to send psi, and she'll encode it as 3 copies of psi, 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 psi. So what do you think about that? That's not going to work, right? Because no cloning theorem says you can't copy quantum states. So problems for making quantum error correcting codes. The first one, well, QECC stands for quantum error correcting code. First one is the no cloning theorem. Prohibits repetition. So we need some way to figure out how to make a quantum error correcting code that doesn't involve repeating the information, which is kind of strange because it seems like in the classical case, repeating was an important part, so that if one of the bits went wrong, we had extra information around. OK. But as you think about it some more, there's more problems. I mean, in the classical case, Bob said, OK, I'll look at the state that I receive. I see it's 0, 1, 0. And therefore, I'll correct it to the majority that has 0, 0, 0. But if you're sending quantum states, you don't want Bob to look at the state, right? You don't want him to find out whether it's an encoded 0 or an encoded 1. That would destroy the superposition. So somehow we need to measure the syndrome, sorry, measure the error. But we don't want to collapse superpositions. Okay, and you know, if we can somehow deal with this problem, it's still going to be true that quantum error correction is going to be more complicated than classical error correction, because classically we basically just had to deal with bit flip errors, right? It's a bit, it can change. That's kind of all that there is that can happen. But quantum mechanically, we have a qubit, right? We have alpha 0 plus beta 1, and so not only can the bit flip, but you could have a phase change, right? You could have the phase flip as well. And as you start to think about this some more, you say, well, OK, there's bit flip errors, there's phase flip errors. But that's not it, right? There's also rotations by arbitrary angles, phase rotations by arbitrary angles, or rotations by a different axis. There's, you know, decoherence errors, like dephasing, that are CP maps. And you know, all of these can plausibly happen to a qubit. And so we should have to insist that our error correcting code be able to correct for those as well. Okay, so with this list of problems, maybe it seems bleak, the prospects of having quantum error correction. But obviously, I said we'd be talking about it today and tomorrow, so there must be something you can do. So let's start small. We won't try to answer all of these problems at the same time. Instead, let's focus first on the first two, and just try to get a code that corrects bit flip errors, with the data that's encoded being a qubit. So we have this classical repetition code, and that corrects bit flip errors. So why can't we use that somehow to protect qubits? And so what we do is basically do kind of the obvious way of the way we always convert a classical circuit into a quantum circuit. We make it work on the basis states, and then superpositions will go to the same superposition by linearity. So in particular, we can encode 0 as 3 zeros, 1 as 3 ones, and so then a superposition alpha 0 plus beta 1 will go to alpha 0, 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1, 1. Okay? And if you look at this, you see maybe right away that this is not the same as three copies of alpha 0 plus beta 1. Okay, and that's good, because this thing is not allowed by the Noether-Kronig theorem. This thing is allowed. This is an entangled state for, you know, for general alpha and beta. This solves problem one. We don't want to clone the state. It's just enough to, for at least for this bit flip code, it's enough to copy it in a single basis. And then for superpositions, we'll get entangled states. Okay, so entanglement allows us to add some redundancy without actually literally repeating the quantum state. Okay. Okay, so let's move on to problem two. So we still have this problem that if we measure the bits of the state to see whether we have, you know, 0, 1, 0, and try to figure out where the error is. Then we'll collapse a superposition between this term and this term. Okay, and we don't want to do that because, you know, we want to store a qubit. So the solution to that is to measure just the information about the error. Okay, so how can we do that? Well, let's think about in more detail what we do when we try to figure out if there's an error for the repetition code. Okay, what we want to do is figure out if one of the bits is different from the other two. We don't really care how it's different. We just care that it is different, right? So if we had 0, 1, 0, we say, oh, the second bit is different. But similarly, if we had 1, 0, 1, it would be enough to say the second bit is different. In either case, it's flipped from what it's supposed to be, so we can correct it by flipping it back. And so what we have to do is we have to come up with a circuit that does that. So how do we tell if one of the three bits is different from the others? Well, one way to do it is to break it down into pairs. So we say, are the first two bits the same or different? And are the second two bits the same or different? Right? And of course, if they're all the same, then both pairs would be the same. But if one of them is different, then at least one of those pairs will have to be different. So how do we make a circuit that does that? Well, we'll have three bits. That will be the encoded qubit. And then we're going to add two ancilla bits. And these ancilla bits are going to be used to check those two things. Are the first two qubits the same or different in the standard basis? And are the second two qubits the same or different? So to check whether the first two qubits are the same or different, we can do two controlled knots from the first two qubits to this ancilla qubit. And you see, if both of these are 0, then nothing happens down here. If both of them are 1, then this thing gets flipped twice. Okay. So if they're the same, this ends up as a 0. If they're different, then one of them is 1, one of them is 0. And this thing down here, this ancilla, gets flipped once. So it ends up as a 1. Okay. So by measuring this qubit, that tells us whether the first two bits are the same or different. Okay. And then to see if the second and third are the same or different, we do the same thing with the other n silic qubit. Okay, so this gives us 2 bits of classical information. And based on that, we can figure out actually exactly what the error is when there's at most one. So this is called, this information is called the error syndrome. And by going through the possible values of the error syndrome, you can figure out what the error is. So for instance, if the error syndrome is 0, 0, so if the first 2 bits are the same and the second and third bits are the same, that means there's been no error, right? Because then all 3 bits are the same. What about if the error syndrome is 0, 1? That means the first 2 bits are the same, the second and third bits are different. So where's the error then? It's in the third bit, right? That's the one that's different. And you know, if it's 1, 0, then the error is in the first bit. And 1, 1, the error has to be in the second bit. Okay. So we have 4 possible error syndromes and 4 possible errors, including the identity. And we can identify which one happened. Okay? And then once we know that, we can take that information and put it back here to correct the appropriate bit by doing another bit flip. And the thing you notice about this is that this tells us about the error, but it tells us nothing about what the encoded state is. Right? This will get the same error syndrome for a given error. We'll get the same error syndrome whether we started with the 000 state or the 111 state, or even a superposition of those two things. Okay? So measuring these 2 n silic qubits will not collapse the superposition of the encoded state. Okay? So that solves problem 2 here. And 1 we solved before. Okay? Yeah.
Don't we understand, because aren't we going to get some problems because the state in the first 3 qubits is a superposition? Like, in a sense that even if there's no error, it might be that one of the C nodes picks up the alpha part and the other picks up the beta part.
Well, no. So, okay, why don't I just write it out in more detail then? Okay, so we start with alpha 0, 0, 0 plus beta 1, 1, 1. And we have, let's just do 1 n still at 0. Okay. And so now let's do C naught from the first qubit to the n still. Well, that goes to, this doesn't change it. So we get 0, 0, 0, 0. And here we get beta 1, 1, 1. And the 1 will cause the C naught to activate, so this becomes 1. Okay. So the n still becomes entangled at that point with the data. So that seems bad because that's decohering it. But then we do the second C naught. Okay? And the second C naught, well, it'll act on this ket and it'll act on this ket. It doesn't get to cross over. Right? So the second one will take this 0, 0, 0, 0, because it doesn't get flipped. And then the second qubit will cause this to flip again. So we get 1, 1, 1, 0. Okay? And that's an unentangled state. Okay, and this is true even if there's an error in here, so long as it's the same error for both branches. Okay. Any other questions on this? Yeah?
Well, I didn't understand why the node cloning was ever a problem.
Why it wasn't a problem?
Why it was a problem.
Why it was a problem. Well, I mean, it's obviously it's not a problem. We can solve it. But the starting from a naive perspective, you might say, well, I want to make a quantum version of the repetition code. So you might try to encode it encode it this way, which is not allowed.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So it's. I mean, it's a bit of a straw man because it's not something we can or want to do, but it's something you might think of to do. Yeah.
What happens if we have a different error in the alpha part and the beta part?
Well, then you can have a problem because then the ancillas will measure what the error is, and so that will cause a collapse actually between the portions of the state which have different things. But that doesn't really happen, right? Because the error doesn't know whether you have this part or this part, right? So if you have an error that's caused by, say, interacting with the environment might flip the bit, but it'll flip it equally for both branches. Now this, yeah, there's more that can be said about that, but I probably won't have time. So
the fact that it flips it equally follows from unitarity?
The fact that it flips both of them equally.
Yeah.
It follows more from linearity, I would say. If you think of an error, just a linear error, not necessarily even unitary, acting on, say, this state, well, this will always be alpha m plus beta m 111. Okay. So for the purposes of what I'm talking about now, the communication scenario, I'm assuming the encoding part is done perfectly. The errors only occur in the communications channel. So by then it's already encoded and the environment has no way of knowing whether it's, you know, zero or one or some superposition, unless it can make a measurement. Which is allowed as a possible error. We haven't gotten to that yet. So that whatever it does has to act on kind of the whole state like this.
Yeah, but the fact that m of 0 is orthogonal to m of 1, it follows from unitarity.
M, of course, doesn't really have to be unitary if it's like a cross operator from a CP map. So it's certainly true that there's errors here that can destroy the superposition, right? So if you have a phase error here, instead of having alpha 0,0,0 plus beta 1,1, you have alpha 0,0,0 minus beta 1,1. But that's a reflection of the fact that this error correcting code only corrects bit flip errors. So we're going to have to be more clever to come up with a code that also corrects other kinds of errors. Okay? Other questions? So let's think about that case. Let's think about phase errors. But let's start easy again. And so let's, instead of trying to correct both bit flip and phase errors at the same time, let's start by just trying to correct the phase error. So let's try to come up with an error correcting code, a quantum error correcting code, that corrects a state if there's one phase error, one z error. So how can we do that? Well, thinking about it, phase errors are not really that different from bit flip errors, right? Bit flip errors are a sigma x operator, and phase errors are a sigma z operator. And so they're kind of algebraically the same thing. So what we need to do is we need to find an encoding that treats sigma z's the same way this old encoding, the repetition code, treated sigma x's. And we can do that by doing everything in the Hadamard rotated basis. And the reason for this is that Hadamard basically switches x and z. So x is my shorthand for sigma x, and z is sigma z. And since I'm writing those down, I might as well write down sigma y as well, which we're going to Okay. So if you think of what Hadamard does, it will kind of change the bit flip and the phase flip. So for instance, if we started in the basis 0, 1, then Hadamard will take us to the basis plus minus, right, where plus minus is 0 plus or minus 1. And so a bit flip in this basis switches 0 and 1. But a phase flip in this basis switches plus and minus. And actually, it works the other way around. So a phase flip in this basis will change the phase of 1 and leave 0 alone. A bit flip in this basis, well, 0 plus 1 will become 1 plus 0, which is the same. But 0 minus 1 becomes 1 minus 0, which has a phase of minus 1. Okay? So the bit flip in this basis acts like a phase flip. Okay? So that's what I mean when I say that the Hadamard switches the roles of x and z. Okay? And so what that means is that if we do an encoding in the Hadamard basis, then it'll correct phase errors. So for instance, if we encode alpha 0 plus beta 1 as alpha plus 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 beta minus minus minus. Okay? Then what we can do error correction is we see in this plus minus basis whether one of these three qubits is different from the other two. Okay? Which you can do by doing that same circuit but with Hadamards around the C naughts to compensate for the basis change. Okay? So this then gives us a code that can correct one phase error. Yeah?
How do you know that the phase error is equal to pi? I mean, how do you know that it's...
You don't. I'm just assuming that for the moment. We'll get to the more general case in a bit. Are there questions? Okay? So this is a code that corrects a phase error, but unfortunately, it's no good at correcting bit flip errors. Right? Because if there's a bit flip error, well then plus will stay itself, minus will change to minus, we get a phase of minus, and the superposition will get messed up. We have no way of correcting that for this code. So in order to correct both bit flip and phase errors at the same time, we're going to need to add more qubits. And we can do that using, for instance, the 9-qubit code. So the 9-qubit code is going to kind of combine both of this bit flip repetition code and the phase error repetition code. And so what it does in particular is it's going to encode 0 as 3 copies of 0, 0, 0 plus 1, 1, 1. And then 1 will get encoded as 3 copies of 0, 0, 0 minus 1, 1, 1. Okay? And of course, alpha 0 plus beta 1 will get encoded as alpha times this plus beta times this. So how does this correct bit flip and phase errors? Well, within each set of 3, we can see if one of those 3 is the same or different without finding out whether it's a 0, 0, 0 or 1, 1, 1 that we started with. And we can use that to correct a single bit flip error in each set of 3. Okay. And then, so that corrects bit flips. And actually, you could even correct more than one bit flip, so long as the two bit flips are in different sets of 3. And then to correct phase errors, well, we're supposed to have the 3 phases the same, plus, 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 or minus, minus, minus. And so what we can do is we can look to see if one of those phases is the same or different. quantum phase is different. And that allows us to correct phase errors, a single phase error. Okay? So how you do that is a little more complicated than that circuit, but it's not too bad. Okay? So this is a code that can correct a bit flip error and a phase error. And actually it can correct them both at the same time. Right? It can correct not just the case where there's one error that happens to be a flip error or one error that happens to be a phase error. It can even correct one bit flip and one phase error. Because these two processes are just independent. And in particular, that means it can correct a Y error. Right? Because Y is basically a bit flip and a phase flip. Y is equal to, I think it's IXZ. Okay? So this 9-qubit code is the answer to our problem 3. We can correct both bit flip and phase errors. And you know, conveniently we got the Y error for free when we did that. I should say that doesn't have to be the case. You can come up with codes that can correct X errors and Z errors, but not also Y errors. But this one does. Okay? There are questions on that. Okay.
Is there some code to correct more than one error?
There are. So there's maybe a kind of obvious generalization of the 9-qubit code. So think about how do you come up with a code that corrects more than one bit flip error. Well, instead of repeating 3 times, you could repeat 5 times. And then taking the majority works even if there's 2 errors, right? Because then there'll still be 3 bits that are right. So you can have a 5-qubit code, for instance, that corrects for single bit flip error, 5-qubit code that corrects for a single phase error, for two bit flip errors or 2 phase errors, and then a 25-qubit code that has 5 sets of 5 to correct for 2 errors. Now, that's not the most efficient code to correct for 2 errors. This is not the most efficient code to correct for 1 error either. We'll see probably tomorrow some better codes. So correcting more errors requires more qubits. That's, in the asymptotic case, it's not necessarily true. But for correcting, you know, encoding 1 qubit and correcting more errors, you have to go to more qubits. And the codes get more complicated, but you can definitely do it.
So if you need so many qubits to correct everything, then it's obviously way more qubits than bits in the classical computation, right?
So there's way more physical qubits
yes.
than logical qubits.
Yes.
Yeah, so that seems to be the case.
So should we really expect that quantum computations are going to be faster if we really have to spend so many
qubits
on?
Well, okay, so let's talk about this again tomorrow. The upshot is that, well, so let's think about the computational speedups you get, right? So if you're running Shor's algorithm, well, the best possible algorithm we know to factor large numbers is exponential in the number of bits of the number you're trying to factor. Whereas Shor's algorithm does it in a polynomial time.
Plus corrections.
But the corrections, you'll see, are not exponential. And that's important. I agree. That's very important. Honestly, if you're willing to settle for exponential, you don't need an error correcting code at all. You just run the computation until you get lucky. And there happen to be no errors during the time. The probability of that happening is exponentially small. So in the length of the computation you're doing. But, you know, eventually it will happen. And then you would get a factor. But obviously that's not an efficient algorithm, even though the quantum algorithm itself was efficient. So this is important. We'll get back to it tomorrow when we talk about fault-tolerant computation. Okay, but sticking with the 9-qubit code, are there questions on that? Okay, so now let's try to tackle this problem 4. So problem four looks like it's going to be a tricky one, because you know, in order to go from correcting bit flip errors to both bit flip and phase flip errors, we had to add more qubits, right? And then problem four, we have rotations by arbitrary angles and decoherence, and all in all, there's an infinite set of possible things that can happen to a single qubit. So if we had to add extra qubits to correct both bit flip and phase errors, does that mean we're going to have to add infinitely many qubits to correct arbitrary errors? That wouldn't be good. So let's do something that's kind of stupid. We'll take this 9-qubit code, and suppose another error happens. Well, we'll just pretend that is one of the errors we already know how to correct. Okay? So we'll take the 9-qubit code, we'll do the whole measurement process, measures the error syndrome, just as if the error were x, y, or z. Okay? Let's see what happens then. So to figure this out, let's assume that we have an error r theta, which is e to the minus I theta, e to the I theta. So it's a phase rotation. And note that we can write this as cosine theta times the identity minus I sine theta times z. Okay? So for instance, if we have r theta on qubit number j applied to some state psi, well, that's equal to cosine theta times psi minus I sine theta times zj, z acting on qubit j psi. Okay? So now let's assume that psi is a code word of the 9-qubit code. And we take the state rj, r theta j psi, and try to measure the error syndrome. So what we're going to do is we're going to add some ancilla qubits, which can start in the state 0. And we'll do some circuit that's a generalization of this one for the 3-qubit code. And that circuit is supposed to say, well, if it's a poly, it will tell us what poly it is. Okay, so for instance, if we put in the state psi, we're supposed to get out the error syndrome that says there's no error. Okay, and if we put in the state zj psi, we're supposed to get out the error syndrome that says the error is equal to zj. Now, this procedure that we're doing, it uses quantum gates, and so it must be a linear procedure. Okay? And that means that if we have a superposition of psi and zj psi, that we get a superposition of these two things with the same amplitudes. So we have cos theta psi no error minus I sine theta psi error equals zj. Oh, sorry, this state is the error here is zj. We haven't corrected it yet. We've just measured the error syndrome. And actually, we haven't even measured the error syndrome. We've just put it in a qubit or a couple of qubits and so on. Oops.
Take it down and then up.
Okay. Okay. So the next step is let's try to measure this ancilla. Measure the error syndrome. So what happens then? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to measure, and either we're going to get no error, or we're going to get error is equal to zj. So this happens with probability cosine squared theta. And then with probability sine squared theta, we get the other possibility, where we have zj psi error equals zj. Okay. So look what's happened. By doing this procedure and measuring the error syndrome, we end up with a case where we measure an error syndrome, and the actual error is the same as the error syndrome. We started with an error that's just an arbitrary rotation, but by doing this measurement, we've collapsed the state into actually having one of the polys. So by imagining that the error was one of the polys and acting that way, we made it actually true, kind of a triumph of wishful thinking. OK? So do you see that? This is one of the kind of amazing things about quantum error correction that makes it work. We don't have to try to correct all kinds of errors. We just have to correct the poly errors. And based on that, we can do anything else. And in fact, you can kind of generalize this logic to make the following statement. We can say that if a quantum error correcting code corrects two errors A and B, then it also corrects any superposition of those two things. Okay? And as a corollary, a quantum error correcting code that corrects I, X, Y, and Z corrects any one qubit error. So why is that? Well, an arbitrary one qubit error is going to be a 2x2 matrix. Maybe let's start with unitaries. So if we start with a unitary 2x2 matrix, that affects one qubit. But I, X, Y, and Z, if you look at them, there are four separate 2x2 matrices. And they form a basis for the space of all possible 2x2 matrices. So any 2x2 matrix can be written as a superposition of I, X, Y, and Z. Okay? And so therefore, by the theorem, if we can correct I, X, Y, and Z, we can correct any superposition of them. And therefore, we can correct any 2x2 matrix. Okay. Now, what about things that are not unitaries? So we want to correct, say, for instance, dephasing, or some arbitrary CP map that can happen to a qubit. Well, an arbitrary CP map doesn't really even have to be trace preserving, but it's going to map rho to sum of ak rho ak dagger in the Krauss representation. Okay? So what is this doing? That's saying with some probability, a state psi gets mapped to ak psi. And the probability is the norm of this, basically. The norm squared, I guess. And ak is a 2x2 matrix. It doesn't have to be unitary, but it's still a 2x2 matrix. And therefore, it can be written as a superposition of I, X, Y, and Z. Okay? And the code will correct it. Okay, so for any single qubit quantum operation, including one that involves decoherence, this 9-qubit code, in general, a quantum error correcting code, will correct that as well. Okay? Any questions on this? So this is solving problem 4, and it's saying that we actually have a quantum error correcting code. This 9-qubit code really does correct. It encodes a single qubit, and it will correct an arbitrary single qubit error. OK, so if there's no questions on that, let's start to try to develop a more general theory of quantum error correcting codes and see if we can, for instance, come up with a better, more efficient quantum error correcting code that uses fewer than 9 qubits. So one thing that is clear, I hope, is that the Pauli errors are playing an important role here. Right? Certainly they're playing an important role as errors, and it turns out they'll play an even more important role in what we'll do next. So let me define something called the Pauli group. Which is about the Paulis on multiple qubits. So the Pauli group, I tend to denote P sub n, is a group, and it consists of tensor products of I, x, y, and z on n qubits. So for instance, on 3 qubits, you might have things like x, tensor I, tensor z. And then to make it a group, well, you know, these things anti-commute, so we have to have a phase of minus 1. And y has this I in it. Y is equal to I times xz. So we need overall phases of plus or minus 1, plus or minus I. Okay, and then this thing will be closed under multiplication, and it'll form a group. So this is a group with a lot of nice properties. The two that I'll need the most. Well, first of all, if you take any poly, so anything in this poly group, then it will square to either plus 1, plus the identity, or minus the identity. Okay, so you get minus the identity if you have a phase of plus or minus I. You get plus the identity if you have a phase of plus or minus 1. Right? So that means that these tensor product of polys, they're self-inverse, for instance. Okay, so that's also important for it to be a group, but it's useful more generally. And then the other thing is that, well, x, y, and z, they all anti-commute with each other. And we have tensor products of those things. So that means that if you take any two elements of this group, they either commute or they anti-commute. So either the commutator is 0 or the anti-commutator is 0. Okay? But I should add that it's straightforward to see which of these happens, but it's not so for a single qubit. The identity commutes with everything, but all the other ones anti-commute with each other. That's not true for multiple qubits. So for instance, x tensor x commutes with z tensor z. Right? Because when you move x past z, you get a minus 1, but you're moving two x's past two z's, so you get two minus 1's. So plus 1. OK? I hope that's clear. Yeah, OK. So with that said, let's start to think about the 9-qubit code again and think about what we have to do to correct errors. I kind of slept over that a little bit when I introduced the 9-qubit code. I guess I could. So what do we have to measure to measure the error syndrome of the 9-qubit code? And I want to phrase this in terms of polys to make it in a kind of totally quantum language. So what I said was, well, we have to see whether the first two, so within each set of three, we want to see, to correct bit flip errors, we want to see whether the first two within that set of three are the same or different. So that's one of the basic things we want to do. And we can phrase that in terms of the Pauli operators by using z. So we say if they're the same, then the eigenvalue of Z tensor Z is plus 1. Right? Because Z will give us a phase flip for a 1 and no phase flip from 0. But if we get two of them, then we either get 0 or no phase flip. Sorry, 0 or 2 phase flips. Okay? So saying that they're the same as plus 1 eigenvalue, and saying that they're different, that's the minus 1 eigenvalue. Okay? So then writing down what we need to measure to see whether to find bit flip errors in this 9-qubit code, we just say, well, we should measure the eigenvalue of a ZZ on the first and the second qubits, and the eigenvalue of ZZ on the second and third qubits. Okay, and that tells us in the first set of three, the eigenvalue is plus one, or whatever. That's the error syndrome, basically, for bit flip errors for the first three qubits. And then we do the same thing for the other sets of three. Okay, giving us a total of 6 Pauli operators that we should measure. So the correct code words are plus 1 eigenstates of all of these 6 things. But if there's an error, then there might be some minus 1 eigenstates. OK, so what about seeing if the phase flips are the same or different? So that's a little trickier. So it's not enough to just do a single bit flip on one of these qubits, because these states are definitely not plus 1 eigenstates of x on a single qubit, right? Because, you know, x on the first qubit will take 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 1, 1 to 1, 0, 0, minus 0, 1, 1, which is totally different. But you can see if we flip all 3 of these qubits, then we're getting the phase out, right? So if you take x, 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 well, this gives you an eigenvalue plus 1. This gives you an eigenvalue minus 1. Okay. So that's still not enough, because we don't want to distinguish between the logical 0 and the logical 1. But you see, if we take 6 x's, then that will give us either 2 pluses or 2 minuses for the correct code word. So if the phases are the same, it'll give us an eigenvalue of plus 1. And if the phases are different, it'll give us an eigenvalue of minus 1. And that's what we wanted to measure, whether the phases were the same or different. So that's what we should do. We should measure 6 x's on the first 6 qubits, and then on qubits 4 through 9. Okay, and so here's 8 things we have to measure. And these 8 things, the eigenvalues of these 8 things, of these 8 operator, Pauli operators, will tell us the error syndrome for the 9-qubit code and let us correct the errors. Okay? Okay, so of course, these 8 things are not the only things you could measure to tell us this information. So for instance, I phrased it as saying we should measure whether the first 2 qubits are the same or different, and whether the second and third qubits are the same or different. But we could also have measured instead whether the first and third qubits are the same or different. Right? That tells us the same information, basically. It tells us in a slightly different way. The error syndromes will get rearranged from what we did over here. But that's OK. It still tells us what we need to know. And so if you think about it, well, the correct code words are plus 1 eigenstates of all of these things. And that also means that there are eigenstates of the products of these things. And so in particular, we can define something called the stabilizer. And the stabilizer of the 9-qubit code, well, of any code, any quantum error correcting code, can be defined as the set of Paulis, so m in the Pauli group, such that m psi is equal to psi for all code word psi. Kind of getting in the corner here. Okay. And can you see that? Okay. So so the stabilizer is then kind of encapsulating all of the information about the things we wanted to measure for the 9-qubit code to measure the error syndrome. And so we'll talk much more about stabilizers tomorrow and how they help us define codes and correct errors. But are there questions on what we've done so far today? Yeah?
Could you repeat the thing about the X?
The X's, how it helps you detect the phase errors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you think of these code words, they're both plus one eigenstates of these six X operators. Right, because if you apply bit flips on the first six qubits, for instance, well then the 000 branch and the 111 branch in each set of three will get switched, and for the logical zero you get a plus one for each set of three. For the logical one you get a minus one for each set of three. So it's an overall eigenvalue of plus one. Okay, but if there's been a phase error, then what do we have instead? We might have 000 plus 111, 000 minus 111. And in that case, we'll get 1 plus 1 and 1 minus 1, and it'll have an eigenvalue of minus 1. Okay, so the eigenvalue plus 1 minus 1 for the 6x operator tells us whether the first two phases are the same or different. Okay, now putting that together with the information from the second 6x operator, whether the second and third phases are the same or different, we can say where the phase error is. Okay? Other questions? Okay.